Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted SEO podcast host. I'm here with Zeke. Why don't you give yourself an introduction and focus on the parts of your career and history that make you trustworthy in this industry?
Sure. So I'm what you would call a serial entrepreneur. My background is in economics and statistics. So I've worked with analytics, machine learning, AI for the last 2 decades. My current startup is Data Speaks, and we help companies figure out what ads drive their sales so they can invest their marketing budgets in the best way possible.
Interesting. So I find that a lot of people have misconceptions about the nature of LLMs and AI capabilities as far as that approach. I usually steer them towards, reading Wolfram Alpha and reading his blog post describing how ChatGPT works. But I'd be interested, since you spent so long in it, how do you approach this technology to explain it to the people that are being affected by it or are might be using it to leverage it for their campaigns, leveraging it for their life.
So the setup we have is we use LLMs at the beginning of the process and then at the end, and we use machine learning in the middle. So what I mean by that is our AI interacts with our users to learn everything about your business. So it might ask you, for example, what kind of products you sell, what's your average order value, lifetime value, retention rates, what your media mix looks like. What the customer, different customer segments you have, and so on. So it ingests data directly from 300 different connectors, but also through AI, we are asking you all those questions so we can then learn about your business and then build a deterministic machine learning model that is going to be customized to your business. So that's where all that plain English conversation is then translated into data into a structured format for our models. Then our machine learning models run with that, output the data to a data warehouse, and then from there, AI will kind of take over again and explain that to you. So it will be able to answer questions, it will be able to give you recommendations. There are a lot of ways to use AI, but the way we use it is first to learn about your business and second to communicate what are usually very complex machine learning models in a way that it's easy to understand.
So the value here for the LLM is to take complexity and make it simple, but also take simple and make complexity. It's kind of
So, when you create a machine learning model customized for a certain business, you're gonna always outperform any generic models. The problem with that historically is that the only way to do that was with a data scientist, and that's gonna cost you a lot of money. So that's the data scientist that is gonna be asking you a bunch of questions to then get the data needed to feed the model. And then once the model gives you an output and shows you how much of your revenue came from each channel, campaign, creative, and so on, at what ROI, what to invest more in, what to invest less in, all that can be a little overwhelming to the average marketer. So what the AI does is essentially just gives you a summary, and then you can ask questions and interact just the way you would do with a data scientist, but for a fraction of the cost.
that's an interesting model. I like the concept because I know from experience that gathering insight out of large data sets when it comes to, whether that's search volume data, whether that's conversion information bucketed down by campaign, and whether that campaign is matched into smaller subgroups. How have you accounted for the inherent challenges for each of those unique advertising models or modes? Because what might be more effective on, say, Google Ads, and the type of creative and terminology that then needs to be used on advertising on Meta, those are subjectively different, and then objectively different outcomes as well. So, how have you worked to adjust the model to account for the difference between those advertising channels?
Yeah, of course. So, in the last few years, there's been this new standard coming up called the Unified Marketing Measurement. So, Google calls it Marketing Effectiveness Measurement. Meta calls it Measurement 360. TikTok calls it Holistic Measurement. But they're all exactly the same, and it's built on three different pillars. So, one is attribution, which is following you as a user across every channel and every device. And the other two are aggregated and not at the user level. So one of them is media mix modeling that is looking at the impact of your media spend on your revenue. And the other one is the ability to run incrementality experiments. So as you increase or decrease budget in different states, what happens to your revenue in those states? So all three combined give you the most holistic view of marketing performance. So the key to doing media mix modeling the right way is understanding those nuances that you are talking about, figuring out how to categorize your media. So there's some stuff that comes directly from the platform. So for example, if you're running Google, you have brand search, non-brand search, performance max, demand gen, video, and so on. But then in addition to that, LLM is very good at recognizing patterns based on your naming convention. So what is top of funnel? What is middle of funnel? What is user-generated content versus brand content, and so on. So with all that, then it runs a lot of different models to see what is actually a strong indicator of performance and what isn't. And based on that, it keeps refining the model until it can predict future behavior in the best way possible. So we say that a model is performs well when it's able to predict the outcome of any action before it happens. So what would happen if you decrease your Google ad spend by 20% and you increase your, Meta top of funnel 30%? What are your sales going to be tomorrow?
Now, obviously, it comes to me that for a data system like this to be effective, you might need to have a certain volume of spend or a certain size of brand. Like, obviously, if you've got a CPR class in one city and you have a couple hundred dollars in ad spend, that's definitely going to be a much, much smaller signal to consider implications from. Is there a certain level of advertising spend or size of company where you see that an approach like this really starts to kick in with the ROI, really starts to kick in because you're able to optimize? Obviously, there's a difference between, somebody pinching pennies to try to get a $200 budget to give them ROI versus you've got, $20,000 a month in ad spend that you're trying to optimize for.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. That's the huge consideration. We work with companies spending 100,000 or more per month across multiple channels.
So when you're at that scale, does something like an ad campaign like that you're talking about have an attribution or an understanding or connection to the potential organic side effects of advertising? Meaning, is there, like, if you run ads on TikTok, which is not optimized for click-through necessarily for ads, it's almost, intentionally sometimes very hard to get them to take a specific action, but having an influencer campaign that you're paying for can drive branded clicks that then arrive through measurable through Google Search Console. Is there anything in your modeling that's looked at that hybridization effect based off of how social media channels have basically started to try to really crack down or control clicks, but the side effect of advertising is awareness, and a secondary effect of that awareness is, you know, branded search through Google.
So certainly when you do this kind of you have a more sophisticated attribution platform, you can go past what pixels could potentially track. You know, so with the third-party pixels the platforms give you, you have a lot of different issues. You know, so one of them is 42% of those conversions are going to be blocked by browsers and ad blockers. Another issue you have is that these pixels don't talk to each other. So 53% of all conversions are claimed by more than one platform. And then you have 58% of conversions happen outside the attribution windows, which are usually 7-day click, 1-day view. So really, pixels are very skewed towards the last click in the funnel. And, you know, that's why you see stuff like, you know, retargeting, brand search being overcredited, and all the top of funnel, YouTube, Meta being undercredited. So when you go beyond tracking individuals and you start looking at, you know, the whole funnel with something that doesn't require tracking individual users, you can, in fact, look at top of funnel TikTok campaigns that are designed for traffic and how that translates into sales. Because what happens is, if let's say you sell, you know, $10,000 per day, and if you're always at that kind of level of sales and you increase TikTok traffic and then sales increase, then you see those correlations. Now, if you increase this and sales stay the same, that also is telling you that doesn't have a lot of impact. Of course, you can't really look at, you know, one day. You have to look at 50 different states per day. And when you look at 3 years worth of data, you end up with more than 50,000 data points. And machine learning is really good at finding the patterns and understanding that every time you increase your spend here, your sales increase, and then every time you decrease, your sales decrease. So, you're not limited to tracking the last piece of the funnel. You can actually look at the whole thing.
So, having worked with some of these big brands and these models, I would imagine that there's probably quite a difference. I mean, I have a difference when I'm talking to my friends, like, you know, Michael McDougall at Right Thing Agency. He, you know, focuses on lead-based companies and the process of getting somebody to give up their contact information and follow through to the sale is one process. But I work with another agency, and, you know, their clients are mostly e-commerce, and so my strategy for them are different. Based off of your experience of what you've set up for your clients, how does the advertising mix change or adapt based off of whether the business model is e-commerce based versus a lead based system?
Yeah, so there, most of our clients are e-commerce. And the reason for that is that when we're talking about the three pillars of unified marketing, attribution becomes much more important for B2B. And that's because you're going to have a lower volume of leads most of the time. It becomes more important to know who the individuals are. Because, for example, if you're going to make a call, being a salesperson at a B2B company, you might want to know that this particular individual saw the pricing page or downloaded a PDF. So tracking individuals becomes much more important. And then there's a couple of other considerations when figuring out lead value, because what happens is when you get a lead, you don't know yet how much that lead is going to be worth until later. But you need to optimize your media today based on the expected value of that lead. So you need to know two things. One is, what is the average closing rate? And two is, what is the average deal value? And with that, you could essentially figure out how much each lead is worth and update that as you go along, because, you know, that can certainly change as you change your media mix and, you know, your messaging and so on. But you have to go with the best data you have right now and then optimize that as you go along.
That makes sense. You know, I think that not enough people, especially in SEO, really consider or appreciate the nuance when it comes to lead acquisition. There is a subcategory there, and it does apply to both e-commerce and to lead generation sites, and that is conversions into an email list where, you know, obviously you're trying to capture that person, so you're offering up a PDF, you're offering a downloadable, you're getting, you know, putting out a webinar, or a softer thing where you're not trying to sell them a purchase at that moment. When it comes to like your sales process and that ingestion of data and the suggestions that comes back from it, how do you account for, you know, those sub programs running? And is there a sub routine, or is there a process or data input from, you know, how effective are your email campaigns at converting after the fact?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a huge consideration. So that's where we, us talking to our clients, goes a really long way. You know, understanding what your business model is, AI is doing a lot of that right now for us. But there's, one example of that would be an e-commerce site that has, you know, a kind of a new customer discount code that's very different from, you know, what you're describing with B2B, where you have maybe, you know, white paper downloads and webinars and quote requests and so on. So going to your example, really what you want to do is you want to do two things. One is you want to estimate the value per lead for each action that people take. And that's going to be, you know, higher for a quote than a webinar, and higher for a webinar than a PDF, for example. The other thing that is really important to do is to understand that there's going to be an overlap between people doing multiple things. So if half of the people signing up for the webinar then request a quote, you don't want to count those people twice. So you have to understand the overlap and calculate that accordingly.
That makes sense. I'm curious, what are some of the actionable insights as far as actions on these campaigns that you see coming out of your suggestions more commonly? You know, obviously your goal is to get, you know, niche recommendations, but is there, you know, some general lessons that you usually see coming back in the mix that, you know, somebody might want to prepare themselves for?
Yeah, the core problem we solve is that for every dollar marketers spend in advertising, 36 cents go to waste. So what that means is that if you are spending, for example, $100 per month using pixels as your, you know, compass, and you were to redistribute those $100, you know, you don't spend any more money, but you redistribute that money, you can get 36% more revenue from the same budget. And that happens not because marketers are not paying attention to the data, but because the pixels are 50% off on average. And you never know what's overreporting or underreporting. So you invest in what seems to drive stuff, you know. So you see a lot of overinvestment in bottom of funnel stuff because that's what pixels tend to favor, rather than what actually drives sales in the first place. So the main recommendation our clients get from DataSpeaks is what to increase by how much, what to decrease by how much, and how much additional profit each of those changes is going to generate.
Interesting. Generally speaking, as an industry, how do you see the evolution of digital advertising being effective? I mean, because in, you know, 2004, 2005, the majority of digital advertising was banners. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every site had, you know, banners at the top, banners at the top, bottom, banners at the in the middle. And then we went through an age where those kind of got skinnied out. Google had restrictions on those. But we also, it seems like what is old shall be new, and it seems like, you know, sites are now flush again, with a bunch of advertising just to try to scrape every last dollar off of those visits. How effective are you see how what's your opinion on that evolution of digital advertising of people becoming ad blind? People, the conversion rate off of these ads changing as, these platforms become more and more aggressive with their advertising.
Yeah, I mean, I can take that question in so many different ways. So one of the things we're seeing is AI replacing search in great portions of it. So that's one of the things that I think is going to happen. Where AI is going to be start recommending products much more. I also what I'm seeing is much more reliance on platform algorithms, and the key to that is making sure that they're getting all the data they need to optimize for the right customers and the right ads. So if you're running third-party pixels, for example, about 42% of your conversions are not being tracked. So algorithms take 42% more spend to learn the same amounts as if you were to use first-party tracking. So that's really important to not only track with media mix modeling and incrementality testing to make sure that you invest in the right channels and campaigns, but then you want to give the you want to help the platforms learn as well, and first party tracking is what you use for that. So that's going to become I believe it's already a must, but it's going to become a bigger problem as there's more and more restrictions on third data collection, and it's going to become something that you have to do. Yeah, I mean, Mark Zuckerberg even said, just give us your budget, we'll figure out how to spend it for you. And Google is kind of doing the same with Performance Max and Demand Gen. So algorithms can certainly do that much, much better than most people. The key for people running brands and communications is essentially feeding these algorithms pre-approved messaging and being very specific in terms of who your best customers are, and learning and refining as we go along.
I had an interesting conversation the other day with somebody that was in the ad world as opposed to the SEO world, and he was making the point that SEO was very much focused in between 2010 and 2020 of just focusing on like showing up on this particular aspect of the digital marketing process, and that was specific to on Google. When people are trying to vet or gather information. But with the diffusion of platforms, with people fleeing from Google and doing their searches on TikTok and following people on Instagram to get concepts and ideas, to following, people on LinkedIn and other platforms, participating on Reddit, we really have shifted gears to the concept of an attention economy. Would you agree with that analysis? And if that's so, what's the knock-on effect of the transition from marketing to participation in an attention economy?
I think it's fair to say that we've always been in an attention economy, and my take on that is that the getting that attention has been more and more difficult over the last few years as there's more creators and brands trying to get that attention, and that's growing at a much faster rate than the number of users, right? So that's why we in the effort all these companies have to make more money out of us, we are being bombarded with much more advertising. Every time it's more covert, So I think it's very important to recognize that the attention span right now is much shorter than it used to be, and we need to be very, very good at getting to the point in, half of a second. And we have to use every element in our communications to do that. The visual, the title, all that needs to convey in half of a second that I'm talking to you. And what I mean by that is, for example, if you You know, let's say you have an accident and you broke a knee a month ago, and you see an ad saying, "Did you just break your knee?" It's like, that's going to stop you in your tracks. You know, so you have to ask a question that people are going to say, "Yes, that's me."
Yeah, that's interesting. And it kind of comes to mind that there, with the prevalence of AI, we're also seeing a rise in, you know, Midjourney just released, you know, AI video capability on top of what has finally evolved to be like seriously intense image generation capability. Now, getting to make the specific image that you want, even I, as a, you know, I've been on Midjourney since it was version one. So getting the prompts exactly right to engineer the image that you want is a lot harder than people think. But my question is more about the, let's call it the uncanny valley. You know, that moment where people are watching, you know, Final Fantasy VII, the movie in 2001, and like, this isn't real. They're trying to make it real, but it's not quite real. I think that we're closer than ever in terms of having AI that truly fools people, but I think there's still an uncanny valley effect. What's your take on being careful with using AI-generated ads or embracing AI-generated ads? And are you seeing that people are readily accepting it, or are they pushing back on it? What's your understanding from the campaigns that you've seen that you've partnered with or informed?
Yeah, so I'll tell you first my predictions and what I'm seeing, and then a little bit about what we're seeing with our clients. But I think that what's happening with AI now is a problem of expectation. You know, if you expect AI to be 100% the same as what a human would create with human actors, yeah, you're going to be disappointed, you know. So, but if you look at it as, you know, you just need to create a visual for a presentation, and, you know, you can do that very easily with a prompt, that's you're going to be, even if it does 90%, then you still need to have a designer edit it. It's going to be much faster than that. And that's how I see AI, right? Like, it's, there are going to be more and more things that AI is going to take over. But there are certain things that you need a human to do. You know, like, most likely you will want, if you have a one pager PDF, most likely you'll want that to be very well crafted, you know, both the copy and the images in it. But if you need a social post, maybe AI is fine for that, you know. So I think it's really a kind of a judgment call. And I think that two things are going to happen. One is, it is going to become more and more realistic. The other part of it is that it's going to become easier and easier for the average person to get really professional results. Because right now, as you said, you know, it's really tough to get, when you describe an image that you want to Midjourney, there's a lot of lingo that is very, very specific. Or you can maybe upload an image that, you know, it's very close to that. And then the act of refining the prompt is, I think that's where the expectations can be a little bit what create the disappointment in those cases, because even if you were working with a human designer, you might have to go back and forth a couple of times before it's exactly the way you look at it, the way you want it. So I think that's where, you know, if you're patient with it and you learn about prompting, you're going to be ahead of the curve. And then as the technology becomes easier and easier, it will be able to understand you talking in plain English and maybe not using the lingo that a designer might use to get the same results.
Do you still see an opportunity for, like, the refinement of digital marketing skills towards, you know, being that prompt savvy person, being on the edge of, you know, how this model is developing and developing your own, you know, skill set? I certainly would gladly pit myself against somebody that's never used Midjourney, confident that I could come out with something much closer than, like, of an exact expectation, you know, because I've been doing it for years and I've seen, okay, played around with this prompt and I know you need to say, you know, ultra font, ultra photorealistic to get this effect, and aspect ratio impacts it this way. So are we really just looking at, like, the refinement of, skill sets into these tools, into these programs themselves?
I think it's going to, in the same way that you are a better leader of your organization, if you can communicate clearly what you want to your employees, you're going to be a better user of AI if you can communicate to AI what you want out of it. So I think that skill is always going to be necessary, because there's a gap between what you can visualize in your head and how you put it to words. And the more specific you are, the better the results are going to align with what you want. So I don't expect that to ever be any less valuable. I think it's going to become more valuable than ever. And one of the things that AI does sometimes really well is help you if you acknowledge that you want to do something but you're not sure what's the best way to do that. One of the things I do, for example, is I say, I think I want to go in this direction, but I'm not sure. So is there a better way to do it? Is there anything I'm overlooking? Is there any assumptions I'm making that might not be correct? So kind of rather than just do what I tell you, it's like, you're an expert. This is the role you have. You've been doing this for X number of years. You're fantastic at this. Help me, work with me to figure out what the prompt should be. So AI is very good at generating its own prompts and then executing from there.
One aspect that I'm curious how you account for is regionality or city-specific advertising and narrowing and niching it down without just without just defining it by a single city. How are you approaching, because I'm certain that you have at e-commerce, objectives to address markets differently. How is that shaping up in terms of marketing campaigns and things that are effective, or challenges that you need to keep in mind when you're addressing geography?
Yeah, I haven't found that to be a big challenge, at least across my clients. I'm sure that other companies do find that more often. Most of what our clients sell is available worldwide. And so they have to address the global audience. If you have a local business, a pizza shop, for example, most likely, pizza is the same everywhere, but you might want to talk about what's specific to, maybe Chicago style pizza, right? So, but I think that's, it's something that I'm not very familiar with, but I do think that AI, with the right prompting, can figure out what I love about AI is that we, even though you might not be using it right now for certain things, the data that you're gonna need one day to make the AI really good, you've been creating that for years. So that could be customer reviews, it could be product copy, it could be video scripts, every email your support team ever sent. So all that, I recommend to our clients, record every meeting. That's one of the things that, it's not always automatically recorded unless you actually do it. But every time you talk to a client, that's data that, can later be used to create documentation and, content. So you might jump a little later into the game, and without realizing it, you've already have, on top of the foundation models, all this data you've been creating that is going to help you fine-tune the model for your specific needs.
I love that. I worked with an outfit, and they recorded all of their sales calls and then sorted them by winners and losers and then analyzed what occurred, what were the themes, what were the pitches, what were the hooks that the salesperson used. And I'm like, can I have this for my SEO efforts? And they're like, yeah, I guess so. We only used it for sales. I'm like, this is gold, because that's also, what makes effective SEO copy, and I think a lot of people aren't taking human conversation seriously as a source for information. I think that conversations like ours that we're having right now, where we're exchanging thoughts and ideas, I think this is going to become more valuable as other data sources get more polluted of stuff that's come out of LLM tools, you know, like people putting out marketing material that's either just AI schlock, just, you know, direct copy and pasted directly from a prompt, which is comes from, you know, gets recycled, and then that becomes kind of the uninteresting soup mash of data and insights. I think humans are vital to creativity still, and I hope so for a long time. as we kind of round out here.
So one last thought about the structured data has always been much easier to analyze through visualizations. You know, so you can build charts and, you know, break it down and trends and all that stuff. Unstructured data, such as, you know, phone conversations and reviews, customer journeys with where each one is different from the next one, user behavior on your website and what people click and what, where they drop off and that kind of stuff, where every instance of it is different from the previous one, LLMs are amazing at that. You know, so you can ask, you know, well, where are people dropping off on my funnel? You know, okay, well, a lot of people are compared to averages, you know, or the industry benchmarks, you have a much higher view of product pages, but then a much lower add to cart rate. It's like, okay, where are some of the things that you're seeing that would prevent people from adding to cart? Well, you don't have, you know, this many reviews, or, you know, that kind of stuff is, LLMs are so good at that. Things that would a human could do, but it would take forever, you know. So I'm really excited for those kind of applications as well.
It's fantastic. Give a shout out again to where people can find you. Do you hang out on LinkedIn? Name of your company, and if you have anything interesting coming out as far as articles or webinars or information coming up.
Yeah, of course. They can learn more about DataSpeaks at dataspeaks.ai, and feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn, Zeke Camusio. I'm sure we can, it's a hard to pronounce name, but I'm sure we can put the link in the show notes.
Absolutely. I'll make sure that all these links show up in the show notes. Thanks so much for your time, Zeke.
Thank you, Jeremy.